Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. I'm Harley Schlanger. I will be your host. Today we'll be continuing to discuss the efforts of the London-based financial oligarchy to impose a worldwide fascist regime, top-down, in a vain effort to save their bankrupt financial system. The last 2 weeks on the program, we focused on the dirty operations run on behalf of the presidential candidacy of New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the would-be Mussolini of the United States. Now, many people have been saying, but he's not a candidate, is he? But as we'll be discussing, he's in the race, and he's an integral part of this global fascist movement. I'll be joined by a panel of members of the LaRouche Youth Movement today to discuss their efforts on the ground in Texas and Ohio to make these two key primary states the end game for this Bloomberg option. We're going to begin with the importance of an intervention this last week by Helga Zepp LaRouche to defeat the efforts by the same fascist oligarchy behind Bloomberg in their plot to destroy the remaining sovereignty of the nations of Europe through imposition of the Lisbon Treaty on the European Union. So we'll open the program with a taped report from this morning from Jeffrey Steinberg, following a discussion he and others had with Lyndon LaRouche. So, George, if we can get that tape.
Okay. So, this morning, there was a conference call out at the House with Lynn and Helga. And I just want to go through very systematically what both of them had to say, because we're in the process of launching a major global strategic flank attack against a worldwide assault centered out of London, which, if it succeeds, would impose a fascist system on all of Europe by the end of this year. And this coincides precisely with the Bloomberg drive here in the United States, coming out of Schultz, Rowetton, and a whole group of other people ultimately deployed out of London. The point that Lynn emphasized this morning is that this is the big fight, and that we've got the picture pinned down, and that we are going to deploy globally on this one strategic flank, hitting both at the European Lisbon Treaty effort to literally destroy sovereignty throughout Europe and to create simultaneously fascist corporativist dictatorships in both Europe and the United States, which will then be the basis for a drive towards the whole London agenda of a massive global depopulation scheme in the context of the financial crash. Now, what Lynn said right up front is, he said, we have the inside story on what's going on both in Europe and the United States, the targeting of the USA, and we've got to go for a unity of effect. We have to view the assault underway in Europe, the assault underway in the United States, as a single theme, where the objective here is the elimination of the nation-state system in Europe and its replacement by a literally top-down fascist new governing structure in which every state in Europe ceases to have any national sovereignty whatsoever, and you effectively have a top-down dictatorship based out of Brussels in which all of the former nations of Europe are obliged under the terms of the Lisbon Treaty to follow the top-down direction from Brussels, where there is no room whatsoever for any kind of real economic recovery, where the private oligarchy runs the show, and where an attack so-called against any individual part of Europe mandates that all of Europe go into military operations. Now, what happened is, if you go back all the way to 1989, we know what was done at the point that the Berlin Wall came down, when under the leadership of Margaret Thatcher and with a supporting role played by François Mitterrand, the Maastricht Agreement was imposed on Germany. And we've been through various follow-on developments. There was an Amsterdam Treaty after that. And then, of course, in, I think it was 2005, you had the development of a European constitution that would have created a slightly watered-down version of what this Lisbon Treaty now does. And what happened is that in France and the Netherlands and Denmark, that was rejected. There were public referenda. They were defeated, and so it was back to the drawing board. And so last year at the European Union summit in Lisbon, they developed a way of getting around the fact that there was massive popular opposition to creating a top-down corporativist dictatorship over Europe. And so they ratified it in the form of a treaty and then proceeded to push for that treaty to be ratified by parliaments in all the European countries. The objective is to have this treaty ratified everywhere in Europe by May, which would mean that this would go into full force by January 2009. And it literally would mean that all of the previously sovereign states of Europe become nothing more than powerless provinces of a centralized dictatorial government based in Brussels.
Okay, George. Thank you. Now, from Jeffrey Steinberg's report, it's clear that what we face with the Bloomberg option is an integral part of this overall plan to impose fascism worldwide. The Lisbon Treaty, as Jeff described it, is set to go. It's already been ratified by parliaments in France, Romania, Slovenia, I think Malta, and they're trying to avoid any popular referendum. The only one that's scheduled is in Ireland. So this is an operation that's already in place. The last time the oligarchy tried to go for a global fascist regime was in the 1930s. And the nation which led the battle to defeat fascism then was the United States, under the leadership of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The question on the table now is whether the American people will respond to this challenge today. Joining me to discuss this will be Natalie Lovegren from Houston, Summer Shields from a safe house somewhere in Ohio. I think he's in a suburb of Columbus, and Lamari Navarette from the War Room. So let's begin with Lamari so we can get the view from the top. We began distribution this week of a mass leaflet titled Mitt Romney Walks Out, a statement from Lyndon LaRouche. Tell our listeners what's in the leaflet and why it's crucial that we get it out before the March 4th primaries in Texas and Ohio.
Well, in the immediate, you can get a sense of this from just looking at who Mayor Bloomberg is and what sort of, I would say, a group of thought he comes from, because if you look at his policies towards the homeless in just the recent period, what you're seeing is, a massive rejection of the population from homeless shelters, people who have newly been thrown out onto the street. And so if you just look at that, okay, you get a small glimpse of him. But then if you kind of pan out a little bit, you look at who's supporting him? The fact that he backed Arnold Schwarzenegger and the California recall, and the fact that he's closely linked to Felix Roatan, and he's implementing policies, almost exact copies as a continuation of what was done in the 1970s under Big Mac. So the idea was, okay, you have an operation underway, given the type of economic collapse that we're experiencing. People like Schultz and Rohatyn represent a financial oligarchy, which will go to any extreme to maintain their power and control over governments. So in getting this out and getting this message across to all sorts of city councils, state houses across the country, we got a bit of a sense that there is a fight and operation on to completely undermine any capability of responding with the FDR reflex.
Now, Lamari, you just wrote an article, I understand, which will be in the next issue of the EIR on Bloomberg. You mentioned his policy toward the homeless and the model of Big Mac, the Rowett and fascist policy in the 1970s that bailed out the bankers. Rowett said he was bailing out New York City, but he was really bailing out the bankers. What else can you tell us that that you have in your article on Bloomberg?
Well, my article doesn't specifically center on Bloomberg, but more of the activity that we're creating around the country, around turning the presidential election less into sort of a circus, you know, where people are going to vote for their team, you know, Hillary or Obama, but making people into strategic thinkers. You know, they have to become the ones who are going to understand that it's going to be their activity right now in supporting the HBPA as a candidate, rather than going along with the hoopla and resulting in an actual fascist coup in the United States. So we really have to get the American population to become a lot smarter very quickly as to, you know, what we're encountering right now.
All right, well, let me just go right to the people who are out in the field, and then you can give us a report from places other than Texas and Ohio. But let's begin with Summer Shields in Ohio. We hit the ground, I guess, a couple days ago. What are we finding, Summer? What are we doing in Ohio? You there, Summer? All right. I guess we'll get back to Summer. We knew we would have this problem with muting and unmuting, but hopefully we'll have Summer in a second. Natalie, why don't you give us a sense of what we're doing in Texas?
All right. Well, we have brought in some reinforcements in terms of LIM members. So we have about a dozen people here now, and we've attended several events, campaign events. There's been a couple of offices in the Houston area that have opened up for Obama, and a couple of events that we've attended for Clinton as well. And the focus has been to distribute the leaflet called Mitt Romney Walks Out, which really warns about this Bloomberg fascist option that's using the other candidacies to set them up and then take the fall to Bloomberg. And the response has been very varied, but there's been a lot of recognition on the part of the population that things aren't as they seem. Some people at first, they'll be a little bit defensive, saying, "Well, that can't happen. They wouldn't do that." But then, when you really put the situation in terms of the overall economic collapse, and that because of the financial crisis, this is something that they have to do in their eyes. So we've been getting, if we have the chance to talk with people for a bit, they're actually begin to get the point in that context. Now, something that has been very apparent in the Obama circles is a real emotional environment that's on some levels, people aren't really willing to actually discuss the solutions or discuss policies. Actually, at an event earlier today, at a new office opening, there was a explicit mention that we're not going to discuss policies. If you're here for an issue, that's not really what our focus is. But we're here for unification. And the mood that I'm getting from this, because it is a mood, is similar to what I remember the environment When I organized during the Schwarzenegger campaign, the recall campaign back in October of 2003, the mood of the population in California, where there wasn't really a real willingness to think about what the actual solutions are, what policies are going to move the country and what policies are the best for California or, in this case, the whole nation. But there's just a real emotional environment. And that's the real danger, I think, that we're facing, because that's the type of environment where you can have that's the type of environment that is ripe for fascism. Fortunately, I don't think it's as strong here.
Well, the question that Lamari posed of getting the American people smarter, are you seeing signs of that from the organizing you're doing, that people are, there are some people engaging and figuring things out?
Right. I was about to say that the environment in this national campaign is not, it's not as wild. You do, when the difference is when people are challenged on this, they're able to think and they're able to respond. So I think that our organizing is extremely crucial, because when we are able to just even spend a few minutes with people, make them aware of this Bloomberg option and just the grounds that are being laid for these fascist policies, people are able to actually get the concept very quickly.
Good. Well, you're listening to The LaRouche Show. We're hearing from organizers of the LaRouche Youth Movement, who are taking the point in a battle to wake up the American people, to get them to understand that what they face is a fascist option in the campaign, which so far is an unannounced campaign, but is a campaign of Michael Bloomberg for president. Now, let me just tell you, we will take your questions via email. You can ask, send in a question at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. Now, I'd also like to encourage our listeners to go to the larouchepact.com website after the program to get a copy of the leaflet, Mitt Romney Walks Out, and reproduce them and get them out in your neighborhood. Get them out to people at work, at your school, at your church. We've got to mobilize. We've already printed 250,000, and Lamari, I understand we're probably going to produce another 250,000 this next week. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, well, the idea is to be flexible. Either the Mitt Romney leaflet, or there might be something new coming out too. But, I mean, that was the idea that LaRouche got across, is we have to be very flexible at a time like this when things are changing very quickly.
Yeah, they're changing very quickly. I just want to go to something that Natalie said on Schwarzenegger, because the Schwarzenegger campaign was a circus in 2002 with the recall, in which you had television actors, you had a porno star, you had Schwarzenegger, you even had a couple of actual human beings in it. But the idea was that they were to make a mockery of the system so they could elect Arnold Schwarzenegger, and his main point was that the government of Governor Gray Davis, the incumbent, was incompetent, and therefore we need a competent government. Now, he was using the fact that there was a $15 billion deficit, which was largely created by his supporters, such as Warren Buffett and Enron. Ken Lay and the Enron crowd that looted the state created a deficit, and Schwarzenegger said he would come in and take that over and control it. Well, folks, we now have a $15 billion and growing deficit in California under Arnold Schwarzenegger, and what is his policy? It's a fascist austerity policy. And who does Arnold Schwarzenegger call his soulmate? Michael Bloomberg. So this question that we're talking about today is a question of your future. Now, Georgino, did we get Summer on? Summer, are you there? Well, so much for the wonderful world of cell phones.
Can you hear me?
Summer, okay.
Okay.
Now, you're in Ohio. Give us a report from what we're doing in Ohio.
Well, we haven't really scratched the surface yet. We've been here, we barely scratched the surface, I should say. We've been here for about 2 days. We're in Columbus, and we have enough literature to get several classrooms and lecture halls. And I think the first wave will probably end up at the 45,000 student campus of Ohio State University. And we're going to be doing city council activity while we're out here also, all over the state of Ohio. And we've already, as people already know, if you don't know, in Akron, the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act has been passed, Bedford Heights, East Cleveland. And so there's already some activity going on out here, and we've had extensive activity with the various Democratic parties of these different localities. And so we just had our first face-to-face activity with the population out here. We went to a first we went to a Hillary Clinton event. Last night we went to a Michelle Obama event, and we unveiled the controversy there. We had four black youth organizers in front handing out the Mitt Romney walks out leaflet. And so immediately people were like, okay, well, let me get one of these. I probably should take this because this has something to do with the program. And then they walked up and they saw that we had a sign that said, victory for Obama is a victory for Bloomberg. And so immediately people were like, wait a minute. And we got a couple of responses. The main ones were the singularities, people who responded, okay, I know this is real. I know Bloomberg's about to announce his candidacy. What have you guys got? Bunch of LaRouche recognition from the crowd. Or the other one was you had to calm someone down and explain to them that we're not attacking Obama. We're just telling the truth about the situation we're dealing with. And most of the people at this event took the leaflet and then came out. When they came out, we handed them more literature and gotten further discussions with them. But there's a general openness to the thought that you would have a Bloomberg announcing his candidacy. No one is too shocked by that being a possibility.
The idea in this campaign is to defeat Bloomberg before he announces by making it clear. And I think what you point out, a victory for Obama is a victory for Bloomberg. Also, the slogan we're using in Texas is vote to defeat Bloomberg in the Texas primary, which, Natalie, I know we're talking about that. Are we getting reactions when people see those signs and hear us say that?
Well, we created quite a bit of stir. A bit of a stir in downtown Houston. Yesterday we had two giant truck billboards with a picture of Bloomberg and Mussolini together, and it had this slogan on it that you just mentioned. Also had a megaphone and a couple of guys in this truck driving around downtown and briefing crowds of people during the lunch rush on the situation. And it was extremely effective because while they were able to get a briefing on a loudspeaker, see this giant sign, and we also had about 10 more youth organizers passing out these leaflets. And so you had crowds of people that were just listening very attentively, coming up, grabbing the leaflet, wanting to know what this was all about. So the responses have been just, a lot of it has been like, well, okay, you guys know something that we don't know.
Well, that's in fact why the irony works, because most people are probably aware that Bloomberg is not on the ballot in either Texas or Ohio. And so that creates an irony which causes people to pay attention. I want to go back to Summer on the Ohio question because, look, this was the big battleground state in 2004, and there probably was massive fraud committed to get Bush to win the state and then get elected. Then in 2006, there was pretty much a Democratic sweep, but still the situation in Ohio, which is once one of the nation's foremost states in terms of an integrated agricultural industrial complex with massive infrastructure from the Ohio River, the industrial cities of Toledo, Akron, Cleveland. And now the reports are that these are some of the leading cities when it comes to homelessness and unemployment. I know you've just been there for a brief period of time, but are you getting a sense, Summer, that there's an expectation that people want something done?
It seems like most people can be moved to become on board in a fashion that I haven't seen in other places. This is my first time organizing in Ohio, so I'm guessing it's not just an Ohio phenomenon, but it seems like, for the most part, people are open to the discussion. And you also have a lot of blue-collar workers, and you've got a lot of farmers. And these guys, the governor of the state was on TV talking about is how we need infrastructure in the state of Ohio. And any candidate who's talking about infrastructure, that's who I'm behind. So he's speaking for some constituency that I have run into slightly, but not too in-depth, no in-depth contact.
Well, now, one of the major operations being run by Schultz and Rowatin is that they also are saying we need infrastructure. In fact, we've reported on this program in the last few weeks that in early January, Bloomberg flew out to California with the governor of Pennsylvania, Rendell, and the head of the Rockefeller Foundation, a woman named Judith Rodin, who sounds sort of like a Rodin the monster or something. But in any case, they held a press conference on infrastructure. But their notion of infrastructure and Lyndon LaRouche's idea of infrastructure are very different. And I wonder if one of the three of you, possibly Lamari, can discuss this question of the idea of Roosevelt, national credit for production of and building infrastructure and jobs, as opposed to the kind of policy that you get from Schultz, Rowatin, or what you've seen with Bloomberg in New York City.
You know, I could say something. This is Lamari. It's funny, the population really should laugh at itself, because it seems like it keeps falling for the same dirty tricks that it has for the past 30 years. I mean, come on, if you think that in the 1970s, if this was the policy in New York City of Rowatin, and you look at somebody like Bloomberg running for the mayor ship, and then you have what you would call a black leftist, Lenora Fulani, running an operation to support him. This is an obvious dirty operation here. And so if you look at their policies, these have not changed, and the mayor, they just have maybe different names, you know, like PPPs, very official, serious sounding names like that, that the population, you know, is just swindled into supporting. But I think it more has to do with an element of corruption. If you look at what Jesse Jackson said this past week of supporting Felix Rohatyn's infrastructure proposals and having someone like him run Obama's, you know, be his economics advisor.
Now, that's Jesse Jackson explicitly said, didn't he, that Obama should bring in Rowatin.
Right. So this is the thing. This is why the population has to be, I mean, they really got to make these guys a complete laughing stock. I mean, that's clear, because Schwarzenegger was a joke to begin with. You know, his proposals were a joke to begin with to solve anything in California. But what's happened is the state legislature taking him seriously, and by the population taking the state legislators seriously, you have a situation where the people on the ground say, well, we can't do anything. We're completely helpless. When it really should be the other way around, right? What Schwarzenegger is a complete weak, exposed opening in this whole operation being run top down with the Bloomberg candidacy. So he can easily be destroyed. Just look at his popularity rating, just completely collapsing in California. Look at what he's done to completely axe the budget, destroy the lower 80%. He should be, fresh meat. The population should be, ripping him to shreds. That's what we're carrying out in our operations in California, all over, up and down the state, where we are going to city council meetings and the state house with this message. And in Texas, too, what is taking place is a Tom DeLay, a Tom DeLay in Texas is what they're setting out to do to Bloomberg as well. Right? We take out this guy, destroy his credibility, but you have to also build up a population that's going to be ready to fight. And we're going to do that by getting out on the street and showing that we're not afraid to say this.
Well, see, that's important. And I think the point you made on Schwarzenegger, I mean, you could say that younger people might not remember that Roatan took over New York City in a banker's dictatorship in 1975 called Big Mac. And that at that time, they destroyed the infrastructure of New York City. And now this same Roatan is saying, oh, we're going to build infrastructure. So it should be clear, if you know the history, that it's a fraud. But the younger people don't know the history. But it's true. Schwarzenegger is right there to see. Now, I want to ask Natalie about this rally that was addressed by Bill Clinton last night, because one of the lines you get from Schwarzenegger and Bloomberg, and I attended the Bloomberg Nuremberg rally, as I call it, at Norman, Oklahoma, back in the beginning of January, where these 17 has-beens and never-wases got together to talk about how we've got to come together with unity, we've got to be above party. Schwarzenegger, of course, ran as a Republican, but he says he's post-partisan, he's above the parties, we've got to have unity. Bloomberg was a Democrat, then a Republican, now he claims he's an independent. You know, he goes through parties, a week at a time, about as quickly as Rudy Giuliani goes through wives. So here you have this, and what do they both say? We've got to be above party. If you fight for your narrow interests, like eating or having a retirement or having a job, that's partisan. We've got to have unity, and unity for what? For sacrifice. Now, Natalie, I understand this was something that former President Clinton took up at a rally that you attended last night up in Nacogdoches, Texas. It's interesting, first of all, that he was in East Texas, which used to be a Democratic stronghold, but the Democrats ceded this to the Republicans. So what was it that the former president had to say to the fairly large rally there?
Well, he made a pretty strong statement. It was almost a reprimand of this thinking. He said that he made a warning. He said, "Look," he said, "there's an explicit argument being made for a post-partisan future, and the line is that we need a fresh start." We need to turn over a new leaf. And so what is that saying? It's saying that it doesn't matter how hard you fought in the past or what positive changes you've made, but we're going to retire you and we're going to turn over a new leaf because we have to be above partisanship. And he said, well, look, this is when you fight hard for something, you're going to make people mad. But what battle do you think we shouldn't have fought in the 90s? What should we have left out? Should we have just not done anything so we could be fresh, not have made anyone mad? He said, if you really want cooperation, then you don't necessarily need a fresh start, but you need real solutions. And the thing that people will get people to cooperate is if you give them something to fight for. And so he said, my wife's campaign, what she believes in is the best way to end divide is to give people solutions, give people a job to do and something to work for.
And what was the response? Did people get that?
Yeah, I think there was they cheered. So, hopefully there was some recognition of what he was saying.
Well, and we had this report this morning from the Obama campaign headquarters in down the street from the office here in Houston in Sugarland, Texas, where they said, we're not here to talk about jobs or talk about housing or economic issues. We're here to get unity. And I think this, again, plays into this idea that the problem is that people are not united. Well, the question is really united for what? What are you going to fight for? What are the issues? Now, in this context, maybe we can get an update, if Lamari has one. I know you've been working on this article, but an update on the fight for the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act, because it's clear that, as Lyndon LaRouche said, we've gotten the attention of Schultz and Roatan, because after getting this before and passed by 60 or so city councils all over the country, it's in about 8 or 10 state legislatures, and now there's a real opposition to the plan coming from, not surprisingly, bankers. So, Lamari, do you have somewhat of an update on this?
Oh, sure, yes.
Okay.
Well, most notably, I mean, given that Bloomberg is the mayor of New York City currently, it is absolutely essential to have some presence in New York State, of course. And this past week, the New York General Assembly passed the HBPA introduced the HBPA, and they have co-sponsors right now. Now, it was 3 days after it was introduced that a field meeting, this was by the Congressional Subcommittee on Financial Institutions and Consumer Credit. It was in the New York City Hall, so far from any of the neighborhoods in New York that actually have the massive waves of foreclosures. And you had a congressman there, and you had the CEO of the Mortgage Bankers Association, who said, we're willing to help any legislation which does not violate agreements with investors who now own securities. obviously, in an anti-Franklin Roosevelt, approach, because the whole system is inherently failed to begin with. And
so they're saying protect speculators, not homeowners and banks.
Right. And, I mean, the only people who were there, because it was so far away from any of the areas where people are really in trouble, was us. We were there. And then days after that, we were at the State House with a team of four. And in one day, we had 18 meetings in the Albany State House with different staffers, various staffers from various parts of New York. But mainly, there was already a predisposition to say, I agree, I already know, have a sense of what's going on, what this guy is all about. And then in other parts of the country, say like in New Hampshire, you have an interesting response that we're getting from also, again, the New Hampshire Bankers Association, who in response to hearing about, the HBPA and the amendment, he disagreed with both of them. But his line that he threw out was that Lyndon LaRouche is calling for the seizure of the banks. He wants to seize the Federal Reserve, and he wants to seize the banks. And this was the same type of line thrown out a week earlier from Representative Kandorsky at a town hall meeting. That this is a communist idea. That was the whole rhetoric that was thrown out, when in fact these guys are liars, absolute liars, and have no other intention except, well, I have to somehow make these investments look good, so I can keep my job. So you have that type of response as a pattern all across the nation right now.
Remember, Lamari, you had the same line 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, when Lyndon LaRouche introduced the Emergency Reconstruction Act to save the auto sector, and they said the same thing after LaRouche got support from unions, from many local officials, and then the line went out, LaRouche wants to nationalize the auto sector, which had nothing to do with the proposal that LaRouche made.
Right, exactly. This is the kind of environment that Felix Roatan has created.
Exactly. In fact, remember, Roatan became the person who ran the takeover of the auto plants by Wall Street in London.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. So we, you know, on the other hand, even though you do have this type of opposition, we have in, for instance, places like New Hampshire, a state house of 400 representatives, assembly members, who have been briefed repeatedly by members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, have received emails. And so they already have a sense that this was a lie, which is a good thing. And that happens to be the case in other parts of the country as well, such as in there was a city in New Jersey which recently passed the HBPA, Orange, New Jersey, and a former rep who was on the finance committee tried to block the passage, saying, you know, towing somewhat of the same line, saying, you know, we can't target the federal government, it's the people's fault, this sort of thing. So what we're doing on the ground is essential. We're doing our part as organizers on the ground to, you know, combat this this type of mentality or any fear that's going to come up.
Now, Summer, where are we going to be in Ohio in the next days? We've got it's just a little over 2 weeks, and we got a lot of work to do. We've got to take a lot of people who are desperate, frustrated, they want change, and we've got to make sure that the slogan that the Obama campaign has adopted, if we want change, we're going to have change. Well, in the case of Jesse Jackson, they may be talking about we need spare change or chump change. But in terms of a slogan, I mean, Hitler said he was a candidate for change also. So you've got to define what the issues are. Where are we going to be in Ohio, and what are we going to be doing?
Yeah, that's very true. Well, we're in Cleveland. We're going to be in Columbus. I don't know my geography here, but I know we're going to be heading out to Akron. I believe we're going to be in Cincinnati. I'm not quite sure.
That's in the Southwest.
That's in the Southwest. Okay. I know for a fact that we're going to be all over the place, and I think it's one of those things where you just have to be ready to wake up and find out that you're somewhere else.
Well, Summer, make sure you get a map.
Yeah. I'll invest.
Now, the obvious point, though, is that there'll be a lot of activity in the next couple of weeks that we're going to be intersecting.
Right. Tons of it. I think there's several campaign events daily we'll be at.
And, Natalie, what are we going to be doing in Texas, which is a little bit bigger state than Ohio, but what are we going to be doing in Texas?
Well, there's a debate, actually, a Democratic debate at the University of Texas in Austin this Thursday. So we're going to have a group of people spend the few days in the beginning of the week really saturating that campus, which is a campus of over 50,000 students, with the leaflet and organizing the students before the debate. So that should definitely have an effect.
Now, are you saying the University of Texas is bigger than Ohio State University?
Summer
said it's 45,000 at Ohio State.
Yes, I guess then I am.
Now, let's just take this to a different level for a moment, because I know all of you have been studying economics. You've been working through Lyndon LaRouche's American System Economics, the FDR approach, and looking at it from the standpoint, the higher standpoint, what is the causal nature of economics. And I know that a big part of the LIM curriculum has been this question of getting across this idea of what is the American system. Now, we've just made a new video, which they call a movie, that'll be coming out, I believe, this week from the basement on the danger of a hyperinflationary shock front. Lamari, have you had a chance to see this tape yet?
Yes, I have.
Why don't you give us a little report on what it includes?
Well, it's about an 80-minute long production, and it's very important, actually. The effect that it was meant to have was sort of the effect somebody would have on the field of getting an excellent briefing from an organizer, where your mind is completely clearly organized and understand what to do. And they achieved that by going through a certain history of the development of the American system in the United States and how it spread throughout the world. But by going through the history of the buildup to World War I and then the agreements thereafter to destroy systematically the German industrial capacity, it became clear what kind of groundwork was set to later bring in someone like Adolf Hitler. So with that, it's very powerful to begin with.
And then it obviously the person who's watching this will see the parallels to this Bloomberg option today.
Sure, absolutely. Especially later on in the piece, when it's really clear that what was done to Germany in the end of, you know, the World War I at gunpoint is being done to the United States.
You know, I use the example a lot. As you know, Lyndon LaRouche has been pointing to the key roles of George Shultz and Felix Roentgen going back as partners for 35 years, that when Shultz was working as a controller of the Nixon administration, and Roentgen was on the board of directors of ITT, International Telephone and Telegraph, where he was placed by Lazard Frere, Shultz and Roentgen were key people in the overthrow of the democratically elected government of Chile and the imposition of a literal fascist military dictatorship under General Pinochet. And what Shultz and Roentgen did there was bring in the economic policies of the University of Chicago, which is totally free trade, deregulation, favoring globalist financial institutions against the interests of the people of Chile. And what they did in gunpoint by killing people, they literally killed young people. They killed, Allende, who was the elected president, was assassinated and killed in a military coup. And they killed thousands of people. They disappeared large numbers of students. And now, with Schwarzenegger, they tried to do the same thing, only without the mass killing, to see if the people of California would be susceptible to this kind of policy. Now, the youth movement mobilization, under the direction of Lyndon LaRouche, has at times rallied people in California to defeat some of the worst fascist policies of Schwarzenegger. But at the other point, at other times, as Lamari pointed out, they've been beaten down to the point of accepting these policies. So when you say this, that what was done at gunpoint to Germany, it looks like they're trying to get the American people to do it at the ballot box. Obviously, this kind of DVD plus the leaflet plus the overall mobilization is going to have to hit people pretty hard to get people to recognize that now they have to wake up. So we have a little more than 10 minutes to go, and I just like to give both Natalie and Summer an opportunity to organize our listeners as to what they're going to have to say to wake people up and win this fight. So, Natalie, when you're out organizing on a campus, what do you think is the most important thing to get across? How do you get across this conception that we're in a crisis, a financial crisis? There is a policy going for fascist dictatorship now globally, as we know from what Helga presented on the Lisbon Treaty in Europe. How do you get this across to a student who's worried about exams, paying bills, their credit card is maxed out, their parents are being evicted, foreclosed on? How do you get this across?
Well, I think that with with students, a lot of the fight is just to get them to look around them, and then use what they see, because if they are just focused on school and so forth, they may not be getting the picture of what's going on in the world. And then helping them to understand that what they see is not necessarily exactly what's going on. So you first want to know the terrain that you're operating in. The financial collapse, the economic collapse, is something that defines the entire playing field. So a student may have gone to a Facebook organized rally for Obama and talked to some other students, and then they, you know, later chatted about it on MySpace about how Obama had energy and made them feel good. But they just need to be sharpened in the sense that's not really what is this energy? Okay, what is change really, or what does the country need? We're in a situation where you have billions of people in the world living in poverty, and you have a country, the United States, who used to be the most powerful, most productive country in the world, is headed for a fascist takeover. So I think students and the population in general, they just need to be sharpened a little bit and organized to see these principles.
And one of the things that Lyndon LaRouche has suggested strongly is that we continue the mobilization with the Devil in the Laptop pamphlet, which goes through what Facebook and MySpace represent in terms of a dulling and a disintegration of creative cognitive abilities. This last week, we had two more fatal shootings on college campuses at Louisiana Technical University in Baton Rouge and at Northern Illinois University outside of Chicago, as well as several cases of high school students being shot. Summer, what kind of reaction are you getting with the Devil in the Laptop campaign? Or is it, do you get the kind of bite that causes people to start thinking about what they're doing?
Yeah, I think that's one of the more marvelous campaigns that we've been waging. And I think that the punctuation, the exclamation point, is this recent shooting in Northern Illinois, because we were just in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And just to respond to what you had asked earlier too, the way we've been effective at organizing people, because things have gotten both harder and easier at the same time for different reasons. Harder because now people are upset because they're going to lose their house and they got to work overtime or something like that. But easier because the nature of the crisis is so much more in your face than it was earlier. What we did was we created the environment where you had to discuss it with your neighbor. You had to discuss it because your whole atmosphere was surrounded by the devil in your laptop pamphlet on a college campus. And so you had no choice but to come out to the table we had set up on campus and say, hey, I got this. You know, I got it in my dorm room. My friend had it. Or I got this in my classroom. And then open it up. Any place you open up in that pamphlet, you're going to be instantly pulled in and sucked into a greater discussion about the real nature of where the youth mind is in the middle of this election and the real nature of fascism.
Well, that's important, and we are going to be reprinting the pamphlet to make sure we have constant stocks of that. I think, Lamar, isn't the pamphlet available for download on the website?
Yes, it sure is. And there's also going to be an updated version, which is going to include, from Sky Shields, an article on the digital versus the analog computer, and also a new introduction. So that's going to be ready to go out soon as well.
So you can pick that up. You can get that and the Mitt Romney Walks Out leaflet on LaRouchePack.com. larouchepac.com, LARUCHEPAC.com. And if you want to order extra copies, you can make a contribution to LaRouche Pack and call us at 800, I better make sure I have the right number here, just one second. Yeah, 800-929-7566. That's toll-free. It's 800-929-7566. And you can contribute to the campaign. We're going to need resources. Now, you can't send people into Ohio or travel around Texas without campaign money. So the LaRouche Pack does take contributions to fund the activity of the LaRouche Youth Movement. So you can call in a contribution to 800-929-7566 and order a box of these pamphlets, the Devil in Your Laptop. And if you're in a city where we don't have an office, you can go to the campus with them. And also take, print out the Mitt Romney Walks Out leaflet, which is available both in English and Spanish. Natalie, just quickly, we're down to a little less than 4 minutes, but one of the things that we're seeing is a divide around the Hispanic population, where the Hispanic population, Hispanic Democrats, are going very strongly towards Hillary Clinton. And some people say this is Hispanic versus black. But actually, a lot of it, when you talk to people, and as you have, you've been doing a lot of organizing in South Texas, it's really the old saying, it's the economy, stupid, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I just think that, I mean, just from the organizing I've done in South Texas, people it's on their mind more. You don't have as much of an escape. You don't have a type of culture where it's easy to escape into some type of fantasy that allows you to avoid the economic breakdown. And the poverty there is worse than a lot of parts of the nation on the border. So I think it's just a question of the reality of the economy. And Hillary has been addressing the economy, addressing the foreclosures. We were doing quite a bit of organizing around the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act in South Texas as well, where we've had quite a few resolutions passed. So, yeah.
I think also this becomes even more prominent now that Mexican President Calderon attached himself to Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger and said, look, we're here as a pool of slave labor for you. We're a labor-intensive economy. You're capital-intensive. Come down and take our laborers. That was probably, when Americans start, especially Hispanic Americans, start hearing that, they're probably going to be pretty angry, don't you think, Nat?
Yeah.
And we've got to get that story out. I do have, I think there's something, that my computer is not attached right now, George, so I can't get the email that's there. Let me just, Lamari, anything you want to add? We've got a little less than a minute and a half to go.
Yeah, I guess I can add something from California that we've been doing, which also has been working with the Hispanic community, which is that from the LA City Council, they're not willing to do anything really to deal with the foreclosure crisis except have, foreclosure information fairs or something like that. But in the, the Southeast region, they have a lot of activity. And there's a large Hispanic population, and where some of the leaders of the city have already come out in support of the HBPA. So there's a lot of movement in Southern California, and also we're doing a lot of work up in Sacramento City Council as well.
Well, the Sacramento City Council is vying to be the dumbest city council in the country.
Right,
next to
in the
Stockton.
Worst. One of the worst foreclosure areas,
yeah.
Right.
But Bell Gardens and several other smaller communities in the incorporated in L.A. County are moving. And Mayor Villaraigosa has had some discussions where he's made it clear he knows there's a crisis. Look, there's a huge crisis. We're just about out of time. Call up to get your pamphlets, 800-929-7566. Contribute to the campaign. Get on the LaRouche Pack website. And as Lamari said, start laughing at yourself for how stupid you've been and think about what we can do in the future. So thanks for joining us today. We'll be on again next Saturday for another program of the LaRouche Show. Thanks for joining us today.